It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Can you hear me?
I'm Manoush Zomorodi.
Hi, Avi.
Hi, good to speak with you, Manoush.
And you, and
today
you,
on the show, coexistence.
It sounds like it's clicking in and out a little bit.
Okay, let me see. Maybe the connection here.
With other humans, animals, and whatever is out there in space.
Would you mind just introducing yourself? Tell us your name and what you do.
My name is Avi Loeb, and I have the privilege of being a scientist, meaning that I can follow my childhood curiosity without pretending to be the adult in the room.
If you know a lot about astrophysics, then you know who Avi Loeb is. For the past 4 decades, he has been a leader in the field.
I'm a tenured professor at Harvard University, and I was also chair of the astronomy department at Harvard for 9 years.
Avi has published over 1,000 scientific papers on black holes and how the first stars and galaxies formed.
I've been the director of the Institute for Theory and Computation at Harvard. I was the founding director of Harvard's Black Hole Initiative.
He's written 9 books.
I chaired the board of physics and astronomy of the National Academy. I chaired the advisory board for the Breakthrough Starshot Initiative, which is the first.
Yeah, he's a big deal. But over the last decade or so, he has put that reputation in jeopardy by searching for something else in the cosmos.
I think it will be the biggest discovery in science ever made in terms of its impact on the future of humanity.
Signs of life.
We are searching for artifacts that may have been manufactured by extraterrestrial civilizations.
That's right. Avi is looking for aliens.
Yes, that's my latest hobby.
But why? Why go on a quest that to some of his fellow scientists sounds ridiculous?
You know, one reason I search for higher intelligence in interstellar space is because I don't often find it here on Earth.
As far as Avi is concerned, the scientific method requires us to ask questions and seek answers. So why is he doing this? He says, why not? But exploring the possibility of extraterrestrial life has created a huge rift between him and many of his colleagues. They are questioning whether his ideas should even exist within their scientific community, just as Avi wonders whether we humans coexist with other life forms.
Space is vast. It's measured in tens of thousands of light years just within the Milky Way galaxy alone. So to imagine, you know, there are other beings like us on similar rocks far away is very natural.
I mean, you're right. Everyone, we love to watch movies about other beings that might be out there in the universe. We love to think about this idea that we might not be alone. It is fascinating to people. And you are saying, well, you know, let's use the science to see if there is a way that it might be, sure.
Exactly. Let's use the scientific method, which is basically, let's not imagine anything the way Hollywood does. Let's not assume anything. To make progress, we need to collect data. And, you know, new knowledge does not fall into our lap. And so you have to put effort, money, time, in order to design instruments that will detect those very challenging signals.
Here's Avi Loeb on the TED stage.
I'm just a curious farm boy, and I wonder about the world around me. And I hate to behave like the adults in the room, because they often pretend to know more than we actually know. And that bothered me since I was a young kid. And so I decided to become a scientist and answer the questions based on evidence, not based on prejudice. And for 70 years, we've been searching for radio signals. This is equivalent to staying at home and waiting for a phone call that may never come, because nobody cares that we are lonely. A much better approach is to check if there is any object in our backyard that may have arrived from a neighbor's yard. Like a tennis ball that may tell us that the neighbor plays tennis. People often say, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, but they are not seeking the evidence. So let's just look around.
To understand why Avi began his search for alien life, we need to go back to 2017, when scientists spotted a strange object in the sky.
This was an object called Oumuamua, which means a scout in the Hawaiian language. It was discovered by a telescope named the Pan-STARRS in Hawaii on Mount Haleakala.
Oumuamua was unlike anything Avi and other astrophysicists had ever seen before. And it raised a lot of questions, namely, what was it and where did it come from?
At first, you know, we just knew that this is an object from outside the solar system because it moved too fast to be bound by gravity to the sun. And so it was clear beyond any doubt that it came from outside the solar system. So everyone assumed that it must be an asteroid or a comet, the type of objects we find within the solar system, rocks or icy rocks. But there was no cometary tail.
Even more perplexing was the way that the object moved through space.
The object showed a push away from the sun by some mysterious force. And so it's as if there was something pushing it away from the sun at a non-gravitational acceleration, but there was no cometary evaporation, no gas or dust around it. So the question was, what is exerting this force on the object?
Scientists looked for an explanation, any explanation.
You know, some of my colleagues argued, maybe you can explain these anomalies by imagining a hydrogen iceberg, a chunk of frozen hydrogen. So then someone else said, well, maybe it's a nitrogen iceberg. And then someone else said, well, maybe it's a dust bunny.
But Avi wasn't convinced. He suggested another hypothesis, that perhaps Oumuamua was not naturally occurring. Perhaps it was produced by something or someone from another planet. Perhaps it was alien technology.
And just the suggestion that it might be artificial got me into trouble because I was not supposed to consider that possibility. How dare you even think about that? It's a rock of a type that we've never seen before, period.
Avi published a paper about his hypothesis, which launched a slew of criticism from his colleagues, who said that he was leaping to the conclusion that Oumuamua was proof of aliens without exhausting every other possibility.
All of the alternative explanations had issues, and I just said, let's keep the artificial origin on the table because we are producing space trash. Another civilization might have done the same.
Then, in 2023, two scientists published a paper in Nature with a new explanation for Oumuamua, that it was simply a comet with no tail. Scientists now call this a dark comet, an object that moves like a comet but looks like an asteroid. The explanation does not satisfy Avi.
Because the only way you define a comet is by detecting its cometary tail. That's what a comet is. So if you say that an elephant is an unstriped zebra, you know, that sounds strange because it's not the same animal, okay? And so my point is, when you don't see a cometary tail, don't call it a comet.
In 2024, research was published on the discovery of more dark comets, largely settling the issue for the scientific community. By now, most researchers have moved on from the Oumuamua debate. But the public has not. Ever since his suggestion that Oumuamua could be a sign of alien life, Avi has gotten more attention and funding from people outside the world of astrophysics than ever before. He may have lost favor with his colleagues, but he has gained a whole new audience.
Yes, on the one hand, the public really was extremely fascinated by this possibility, and I got a huge amount of attention from the media, something that I was not familiar with before. And I was also contacted by a literary agent to write a book, which ended up being extraterrestrial, became bestseller, and I participate in about 3,500 podcast interviews. Netflix is producing a documentary.
Thanks to all this attention, in 2021, Avi co-founded the Galileo Project at Harvard, a research program dedicated to searching for alien technology on and near Earth. Avi and his team have received millions of dollars in private funding from a long list of uber-wealthy donors.
We built an observatory at Harvard University. It's a unique observatory. Usually, astronomical observatories are focusing on a small portion of the sky and looking at very distant sources. But here, we are looking at the entire sky all the time, and in particular, searching for objects near Earth that are just overhead. And we are using infrared cameras, optical cameras, radio sensors, audio sensors, and analyzing the data with machine learning software using state-of-the-art algorithms to figure out if there are any objects that are not familiar. I'm not trying to imagine what might be out there. I'm just saying we know about birds, we know about airplanes, leaves, clouds, satellites, balloons, drones. These are things we know about. And is there anything else? And if we find an object that is maneuvering in ways that does not mimic the flight characteristics of known objects, we will write a paper about it and share it with the scientific community. And for me, having more data is really a bliss, because once you have a lot of data, it will become clear whether we're dealing with a rock of a type that we've never seen before, or maybe some artificial object. And at some point, it would be impossible to ignore it.
There are probably going to be people listening who are saying, why, and these are scientists on Earth right now who would say, why are you giving Avi Loeb the mic? You have become a bit of a pariah in your field. I want to quote one astrophysicist, Steve Desch, who said, people are sick of hearing about Avi Loeb's wild claims. It's polluting good science, conflating the good science we do with this ridiculous sensationalism and sucking all the oxygen out of the room. There's a lot of ire towards you, a field that embraced you for the longest time. And now, what's it like having them call you names?
Yeah, I really don't like that. But one thing I learned is that, you know, if you don't want to get dirty, don't mud wrestle. So I don't respond to those. I am still the director of the Institute for Theory and Computation. I work with students. I work with postdocs. I just gave a lecture at the Black Hole Initiative about primordial black holes. So I continue to work on other subjects as well. And the people who know me, you know, are very supportive, because they know that I'm doing it not out of any other reason than advocating for something I believe in that should be studied. And, you know, I borrowed the approach from the research on dark matter that I worked on early on in my career. You know, we don't know what 85% of the matter in the universe is. So billions of dollars are spent on the searches for dark matter, specific types of particles that were proposed by theorists like myself, were very much rewarded by attention and so forth. So I have that experience. And for me, it's no different. But for some reason, this particular subject is making some people very upset. And those are people who are upset about the public attention that I'm getting. You know, when I gave my class at Harvard, in the opening lecture, I asked the students, what is the strongest force in academia? Is it gravity? Is it electromagnetism? They were quiet, and then I answered the question myself. I said, no, it's jealousy.
Can I ask you, how would you know? You've given us several examples of all the data and specimens that you're collecting and sort of sifting through all of this. How will you know for sure? What would be the moment where you could tell the rest of the world, yes, we are not alone. We are coexisting with something else that is alive.
Well, that's relatively straightforward if you have good enough data. For example, if we had an image of an interstellar object and you see bolts and screws and you see that it looks like a technological object, there is no doubt that it's not a rock, that would be clear evidence.
Let's say this did happen. How would it change things for us? What you must have imagined this scenario in your mind.
Yes, I think it will change our perspective because, you know, when you find a partner, it changes the meaning of your existence. We know that from our personal lives. And here I'm just talking about finding a partner in the global scheme of the cosmos. These are all the Earth-Sun systems. You know, there are 100 billions of them in the Milky Way galaxy alone, and perhaps a trillion galaxies in the observable volume of the universe at large. We see so many houses like our own, and to me, it's very natural to imagine that there are residents that we can learn from. So just paying attention to our cosmic neighborhood, you know, will allow us to mature and realize that what we usually care about is not as important as the bigger scheme of things. And we could do better by paying attention to our neighbors.
When I look up at the sky at night, I see 100 billion stars of the Milky Way galaxy. They look like lights in cabins of a giant spaceship, the Milky Way, sailing through space. And I wonder if there are other passengers in those cabins. There are 100 billion of them, comparable to the number of people who ever lived on Earth. It would be arrogant to think otherwise, that we are alone, that we are unique and special, especially if you read the news every day. We are not the pinnacle of creation. There is room for improvement. And so the next Copernican revolution would be that we are not at the intellectual center of the universe. Not only that we are not at the physical center of the universe, but actually, you know, we arrived to the play relatively late. We are not at the center of stage. The play is not about us. We should be modest. We keep thinking that it's about us, but it's not. And we better find other actors that will tell us what the play is about.
That was astrophysicist Avi Loeb. He is a professor of science at Harvard University's Department of Astronomy. His latest book is called Interstellar: The Search for Extraterrestrial Life and Our Future in the Stars. You can see his full talk at TED.com. On the show today, coexistence. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Stay with us.